Bag huge savings on your painting projects at Menards. From your kitchen and bath to doors and trim, and even your ceilings, Dutch Boy has the perfect choice for your painting projects. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a tough paint and primer that provides great scrub resistance and durability. DuraFighter interior paint starts at $27.75 a gallon. Get an additional 15% savings on all Dutch Boy paints when you put it in the bag. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
And welcome back to another episode of the DFL Swimming Podcast. Another episode coming back at you. Dez is back in his rightful place, back in Virginia. Feels good to not be so close, geographically speaking, to you again, Dez. How's it going out there?
I will say this. It's sunny and 65 today, so I cannot complain, Casey. How are you doing?
45 degrees in Minnesota today, Dez.
Ooh.
It's basically summer.
Short sweater.
It's going well, though. Back into the swing of things. How's practice going for the old Cavaliers?
It's going well. I had the kids on a little mini training trip last week. Put them through some bangers, for sure.
Kick them into gear.
Yeah,
that's good stuff. Well, I got a good episode lined up for today. Although the meets are a little bit slower right now, a lot of people on training trip. I think we got some good talkers lined up, some big news circulating around the NCAA. Namely, we got a little bit more information about the CFL College Swimming, what did I say, CSL College Swimming League in a gold medal podcast with Kyle Sockwell. So, Dez, you want to just walk me through a little bit of what they chatted about, and maybe we can just start out with some of the information format stuff that we finally got our hands on after we came off the announcement of this proposed college swimming league for next fall.
Yeah, I mean, the original announcement, we had no clue what it entailed, what it meant. All we knew was that Ohio State and NC State would be a part of it. And apparently that announcement was not the official announcement. It sounded like Kyle wanted to have an actual announcement, but it kind of got leaked out. That's the vibe I got, at least. How about you? Yeah.
Fans love a good leak here and there.
Anyway, it sounds like competition starts late September and goes to early November. There's six teams that will swim, and they'll each swim at least two times. The logistics of it all are still kind of...
Let's back it up. There's 10 teams. 10 teams. 10,
10 teams.
Six will swim twice.
Two will swim three times. Two will swim four times. So it kind of makes it seem like it's kind of tournament-ish style, but makes it pretty exciting. And all the logistics are still being worked out as of what the format of the meet exactly will look like and what kind of the events will look like. Probably similar, we would assume, to... the same events that we will have in college and at NCAAs, but kind of how that stacks up is still to be determined.
Yeah, I mean, we saw Kyle out involved with some of the different dual meet tournaments where there was experiments with some of the different meet lineups. And that was something they did address in the podcast, that they are preliminarily looking at different meet lineups, whether they include skins, for example. Kyle's a big fan of Australian skins, where you got people swimming multiple 50s. Let's say eight people in the first 50, four get eliminated, next four swim a 50, two get eliminated, and then there's a winner in the final pairing. I think he's interested and open to, you know, looking at what the options are, but did clarify that, you know, he's waiting if there's a potential for this to be aired on TV. If there's a TV deal at hand, they're going to put that first, I think. And I think that's a good place right now. Nothing has really been announced, and so I think they have every right to be flexible from that perspective. So
for sure. And there's a lot of different ways they can kind of go with that. The teams that we know are involved, like I mentioned, Ohio State, NC State, but the rest of the teams prefer not to be mentioned yet, named. Understandably, because again, they're still trying to figure out the logistics, so don't exactly know what all of it entails. The league is backed by Canadian Robert Kent. He's got a lot of money. I think he's doing a lot of the pushing here, and it's also financially backed by ISL. But the CSL has total autonomy and they're totally separate from the ISL. The ISL is just helping out with a little bit of the financial logistics there as well.
And that was certainly something I think when this first got announced, SwimSwam comments erupted with, you know, this is going to be ISL part two. It'll have, we'll get a season or two and then it will fold. And I think that is definitely part of the reason that Kyle was on this podcast trying to at least dampen some of those fears that popped up from the public after the announcement, because I think that's fair. I mean, the primary backer of the ISL was a Ukrainian dude who definitely had his, we've talked about that before, you know, the war with Russia, you name it, COVID. There was a lot of different factors there, but that's still, I mean, there's, it wasn't a smooth ending to the ISL and people are justifiably concerned. Where we're at right now though, just like does, I mean, it sounds like there's just money there, but Robert Kent and Sockwell really got the reins of the whole operation. So that's good. That's good.
One thing I thought was kind of cool was, you know, the whole point of this whole thing is like kind of how can you dumb it down and make swimming a little bit more interesting? And he talked a lot about volleyball and Texas volleyball specifically. Texas volleyball, if you guys don't know, has done just a phenomenal job of marketing their university and that sport, and done a really good job of kind of dumbing down the sport. And volleyball is realistically a pretty easy sport, right? Like you hit the ball, ball hits the floor, it's a point. Kyle mentioned that a couple times. How can you dumb down swimming a little bit more to make it very watchable and easy to understand as someone who doesn't understand swimming? Someone who's a new fan, right? Like a lot of times steel meets aren't scored. A lot of times you aren't necessarily sure who won. So kind of trying to dumb it down a little bit and make it a little bit easier to understand as a whole.
Yep. And that was something that he talked about. How does someone who's in the stands at a meet, how do they go to the bathroom, miss, grab a beer, gone for 10 minutes? How do they come back and immediately know what's going on again? In a quick fashion. And so that's something I'm interested to see how they sort that out, because that's fair. I think a comparison that we can make pretty, that I think is a little even more comparable than the volleyball example that he uses, even a sport like track. I think to me, when I go to track, a track meet or watch track on TV, whatever, I don't know if how many track meets I've ever been to. I don't know anything about the times there. When you watch Usain Bolt, sure, he would break world records here and there. But by the end, people just, it was about the dominance that he won every single time. That's what I believe swimming should be working towards, at least in this situation. Come NCAA time, whatever, that's, it can be a little bit more time focused, that sort of thing. But in this situation where it's really trying to showcase the racing and the team competitiveness, how do you make sure that the focus is on the wins rather than the times that people may or may not have any idea what that time might mean?
And I think that comes down to scoring again. And Sockwell mentioned that a little bit, and he talked about the scoring format of the CSCAA dual meet and how, like, if you have live scoring, you have, you know, this team is beating this team live. If you leave for 5 minutes and you have, and you see that there's a big score change, maybe you also have the results as well to the side of it. And you can kind of see, like, I left at the 100 fly. You know, what happened with the 50 free or the 100 free? Like, who won those events? How'd those scores add up? Like, maybe you have the results to the left, scores to the left, and you can kind of figure that out. Make it a little bit easier on the eyes to kind of see and understand kind of what exactly is going on.
No, you're exactly right about that. So, I mean, I've always thought about making a box score what I like to. I mean, how do you go to a baseball game, you see the 9 innings on the scoreboard, you can see which runs got scored in which innings, and you know in 5 seconds flat exactly what happened in that game. You didn't even need to watch it. So how do you make that, apply that to a swim meet is going to be the challenge. You know, one thing I don't kick about this, this whole podcast and listening to Sockwell is, I think he's been spending a lot of time with Robert Kent because he sounds like he got a business degree in the last couple of months. And Robert Kent might have been helping out on the backside of that. Talking a lot about key performance indicators, KPIs, making it past year one. How do you make it past year one? And honestly, I'm here for it because he's exactly right. It's money, money, money these days, and he has found himself in an opportunity where he's got money, someone willing to help him out here, and he's got a vision.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to mess it up and miss the mark.
Yeah, you mentioned KPIs quite a few times, which if anyone doesn't know, it's like quantifiable metrics, kind of like how you measure success, whether it be from them bringing in money, whether it be from them bringing in viewership. How can they measure success? And that was what he talked about a lot. Like, we need this to be successful year one, but they also don't want to sell out year one, right? Like, they don't need it to be like, we want to sell out and get a big brand deal year one and blah, blah, blah. No, they want this to be something that lasts for a long time. He was talking about, 3 to 5 years down the road, like, what are the possibilities of this CSL? And I think that's really cool. Because like you mentioned, ISL happened for 3 seasons and then it kind of just fell apart, right? A lot of politics got involved, whatnot. They're looking out for the long term of this CSL, this swim league, and long term of this sport as well, which I think is going to be very beneficial down the line for college swimming.
Yeah, and this I agree with what you're saying, Des, and I think it is the right way.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
The right stance to approach this from a perspective of this will be a multi-year endeavor, and we're not just going to completely put all of the effort and energy into the first year, which I'm sure they're going to do a good job. They've got plenty of time to work out the details and stuff here. There won't be a second season if the first season's not good.
No, but
how do you make sure that the second season does happen? The question that I'll ask you though is, if this does work and this is a hit and the fans and the public does like this, I don't see a situation where you can continue to have this 10 teams every single year, late September to early November. And my question is, in a world where this works exactly how they envision it to be, how do you push this beyond just the CSL of 10 teams that we are currently being told about right now?
I don't know. It's a good question. I think, again, it's going to have to happen. You're going to have to see 1 year, maybe even 2 years before you get more and more teams involved. Because I think you have to see the numbers. And a big thing that he kept pushing was, this is going to be cheaper for universities in the long run. Like he mentioned, like it's a lot of money to send a team to wherever, right? Like if you are the University of Minnesota and you are sending everyone to Northwestern, like you have to bus everyone down there. You have to pay for the bus. You have to pay for hotel rooms, you have to pay for food. Like it is a really, really expensive thing. And he was talking about how like the biggest selling point was, we can make this cheaper for schools. And I think that's probably going to be a big selling point moving forward as well, is like, if they can make it cheaper, then it's probably going to be easier to get teams involved. I mean, I don't know. What do you think? Like, what gives them a reason to continue? What gives teams a reason to join?
I think you got to look. You got to look at it from a standpoint of its motivation, and he talked a lot about that. What motivates people to put money towards swimming? And the hope is that this will do this. And so, I think if you put a group of 10 schools together next year, who they're able to go back to their ADs at the end of this and say, this was a worthwhile endeavor and here's why, then they can go to their other in-conference teams that they swim with and compete with and say, hey, this is what our experience was. And then my vision, which might even be 10 steps down the road, but then how do you turn it into a situation of, oh, could we Could we find a way to make this a, instead of just the college swim league of the entire NCAA getting put into one league, could we have a Big Ten? Could we have an SEC? Could we have a ACC? And now I know the teams aren't necessarily balanced right now. We're missing programs here and there, more so in certain conferences. But then you start late September, find a way to get through the Big Ten or the SEC tournament or season, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then have a way to then have a culmination of all the best teams. Right now, my only worry is that are we going to have the best teams show up, the best 10 best teams in the country that everyone wants to be at the College Swim League actually show up? I don't think that's going to happen. That's a dream world. And that's, I feel like, always going to leave something on the table, even if this is exactly what we want it to be.
I agree, but I do think we're going to have 10 very solid teams. That's kind of the sounds of it. Bob Bowman was mentioned a couple times.
Yep, that's true.
It seems like he reached out to Bob. Don't know if Texas is going to be a part of it, but he did mention that every single coach that they talked to was all for it. Like, they didn't even get through their whole pitch before the coach was saying yes. So it's obviously something that is very intriguing and very doable from a university standpoint, from a team standpoint, from a coach's standpoint.
Yeah. You at least, at the very least, you got to get the teams in that we've already seen have some of the biggest buy-in into perpetuating swimming forward. So I'm looking at Texas. I'm looking at Virginia. I'm looking at ASU. These schools that even Indiana, I might rattle them off but schools that have made a commitment to putting in production quality, building hype for their dual meets, make sure those teams are in, because they might already have people who, you know, have ASU when they pulled 5,000 people into their meet or whatever. I'm sure not everyone was that familiar with swimming. So how do you get some of those people to be like, oh, ASU swimming at the College Swim League, in the College Swim League this next fall? Make sure that people who already might have fringe fans are in, and talented teams too.
Yes, a good team.
Maybe I'm being greedy, and I want it. If they mess it up at all, I'm out.
It would be nice to see like 10 teams that stack up against each other, right? Like, I don't want to see, Slaughterfest. I want to see
George Washington at the Georgia Tech.
I didn't want to say it, but you said it. Like, I want to see teams compete. I want to see two teams that stack up next to each other, and they have to, like, the coaches are really going to have to think about the lineups and how they're going to beat this team. Like, that's what I want to see, and that's what people are going to want to see too. You see a Slaughterfest, no one wants to watch a shitty football team play against the University of Indiana, right? Like, you don't want to see that. You don't want to see a not great swim team go up against the University of Texas. Like, you don't. You want to see teams that are going to match up and compete with each other.
Well, I mean, and it's not to say that swimming is the only issue with that. I mean, I just watched Ole Miss beat Tulane 41-10 in the college football playoffs. So, like,
you just witnessed Indiana beat Alabama, a poverty school, 38-3, right? Like,
exactly. It's never going to be a situation that's perfect. I mean, at the end of the day, there are going to be situations where there's going to be blowouts, but that's part of it. We see that in every single sport.
Yes.
Is there a way that you can still make it, you know, interesting? Have people, can you have people like us talking about the meet, a preview for the meet, talk about, you know, what makes this interesting? Because you sure as heck know pre-Ole Miss Tulane, there were still people talking about how this could shake out one way or the other.
Yeah.
Did it actually? No. But they were talking about it, I'm sure, about that. And that doesn't happen right now in swimming.
Again, you have two competitive teams and two teams that are going to give it their all and compete against each other. And there's not always that in swimming.
Yep. So let's see if, you know, it's an interesting listen to everyone out there. It's worth, you know, popping on and at the end of the day, I don't think anyone can sit here and say that we shouldn't support what Cal Stockwell is trying to do for the sport. Because right now he's one of the only people who is really trying to make moves. And so even if there are things that are what's going to happen, I think you got to make sure that you support the initiatives that he's got going. So anything else you got on the CSL that we didn't talk about here?
One of the things is like, how do you get more teams into it, but like, how do you get coaches to go all out for the format? I think that question's answered with it's the early enough in the season where you can go all out for these meets and you still have 2 to 3 months to turn around for NCAAs and Big Tens or NCAAs and conference. I don't know. Like, what do you think?
Yeah, I know. I think you got to make it a situation where this goes back to a conversation that we had before too. Kids, you swim to swim fast. And yes, everyone wants to swim their fastest at the end of the season. I get that. And people are never they shouldn't necessarily have to go all out. If we're truly going to focus on racing and who gets the win over time, there's no need for that. No one needs the full shave taper for the College Swim League.
No.
But if you're a school like ASU that we talk all the time about, who has shown that they're able to show up and perform at all competitions that they're at, if you're an ASU team that is then in the CSL year after year after year, I'm a recruit sitting at home saying, hey, ASU's swimming fast, they're going to the CSL, they're doing meaningful swimming all of the fall from late September to early November, and then you're going to train and then go swim at end season, they're going to swim good again.
Yeah.
If I'm looking at that resume versus another school, not to name, or I won't name any names, who is not showing up in the fall, having cupcake meets here and there, just kind of messing around, whatever, I might look down at Tempe. I think to me, that's a completely fair take. And that's how I think you maybe start get coaches to jumping on board to this thing. Once you start affecting recruiting, something's got to give. You're either going to have to shift the way that you're running your program from a performance standpoint, or you're going to have to miss out on kids who want to swim fast from September to March.
Yep.
And I think it's honestly, it's not that simple, but I think it is.
I agree. I 100% agree. It is that simple. Like, it really is. Like, to gain interest, you have to swim fast. And people want to swim fast all the time. That's what the sport should be. That's what it hasn't been for the past 30 plus years, but that's what it's turning into now, and that's what it should be now.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's in track and field. Kids might run their fastest time of the season in the second meet of the year.
For sure.
Conditions were right that day, and boom.
For sure.
I'm not saying that swimming should move towards that. We always got the shave and the fresh suit in the back pocket. So you can stack the cards in your favor. But just swim fast all the time.
It's ASU. ASU is looking at being a top three, maybe top two team this year. And again, they're a team that in the past people have talked about, well, they swim fast early in the season. Can they swim fast later in the year? You can call me an ASU fan right now, and I hope that they get second at NCAAs and they prove a point. I really do.
Yep. And I mean, there's also another factor to discuss beyond the recruiting, which I think maybe should be the prevailing motivation, but something that Sockwell brought up that I think is a fair point. When you look at the coaching structure right now and the way that salaries and primarily bonuses, let's say the pay structures are put together for coaches in NCAA, the bonus structure relies basically only through performance results in February and March, which is conference and NCAAs. There is no way to get a bonus right now as a coach from what you do in the fall. And so when you can start, I mean, coaches, I do not think are bonus driven at all. That's not what I'm trying to get at here. Or that's not their primary motivation. Let's say it's always coaches should be getting their bonuses. That's awesome. But if you can find a way then to give a reason that allow for a reason for a coach to, you know, achieve a performance goal in the fall that they can receive something to, you know, have everyone have skin in the game. Do you think there's anything there on that too, or no?
You totally could be right. Like, you already have incentives for the end of the season. Why can't you make one for this? If this ends up becoming a big thing, I think it has to be. Like, if the CSL becomes a thing and you get other conferences involved, I think you can be like, incentivize being a top 10, top five, or winning team in the CSL for a coach. But until this becomes a thing across Power Four, across the NCAA, I don't know if you can do that.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, I think, like we talked about before, Kyle said that every coach he's talked to has been on board with this. And I do think that everyone involved in the sport of swimming has the interest of swimming and growing the sport at the heart of what they're doing. No one coaches swimming for the money that you can make or the glamorous lifestyle. It's not like people do it because they love the sport. Yeah. And so I think that's always going to be the prevailing reason, but I think it's valid to go around and analyze how do we best attack all of these motivating factors and give everyone a reason. An overwhelming reason to jump on board with this.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'll get off my soapbox now. I scared Dez away from talking completely.
Scared me. You're spitting facts. I got to listen. At least he speaks, you listen.
Hey, quiet down over there, Dez. I got to talk. I got to talk. All right. Let's wrap up that discussion. And leave it there for right now. I'm sure there will be plenty more to come on this and topics to throw around. So I'm looking forward to it. And I think, you know, we got an exciting thing to look forward to next year. So let's reel it back to actually what's going on right now, Dez. I know we alluded to the fact that things are a little bit slower on the meat side of things. But what's going on right now? What are teams doing this time of year?
Training trips, man. And if they're not on a training trip, they're just training. Right now, people that don't know, the NCAA has a limit on how much you can train in season. That limit is my computer's going slow. That limit is 20 hours a week. And once you get into winter break, that 20 hours a week goes away. So teams kind of ramp up the training a little bit. They train more. Some teams that are, you know, maybe colder weather teams up north more might go somewhere down south, somewhere a little bit warmer to train, to go, you know, have some fun, enjoy the weather, and still kind of get their asses kicked. Other teams that are kind of already, you know, southern will stay where they are and just hit the training pretty hard. But you don't have that 20-hour week, so you're getting your asses kicked a little bit. And within that, we have some meets as well. Some teams will swim a little meet, whether it be a tune-up meet, whether it be a big meet. But they might swim a dual meet here and there. Any notable dual meets that we had?
Nothing too crazy going on. I mean, ASU just had one against Grand Canyon. We saw Minnesota with Tampa and Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. We had, let's see what else, UC San Diego with UCLA, Wisconsin, and Tulane. A lot of what we see a little bit there is people might be somewhere training for a few days or nearby, and so they might link up for me. That's what we saw in Notre Dame, Tampa, Minnesota. Notre Dame and Minnesota both down in Tampa on training trip. Why don't we have a meet? Let's see what we can do. And
yeah,
unfortunately, the results are not always awesome this time of year. Something, a pill you got to swallow. But there's meets happening year round. So
it's always good to get up a race. It's always good to swim fast when you can. Like we mentioned, it's always good to swim fast. But when you're on a training trip, it's good to kind of see where you're at. You're getting your butt kicked.
You start seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. Like when we were athletes, I think you said when you're coming off December into brutal training, when you get back from Christmas, you need something. things can be dark.
Yeah.
So it's nice. It is, even when you don't swim great at a meet, it's nice to have something to just break it all up and, and race. So
I also think meets like that are very important, right? Like your body's beat down, your muscle memory kicks in.
Yep.
How do you swim? How do you race? Can you hold it together technically? Like that's really important, because when it comes to the end of the year and you're at the end of a race, so at the end of a mile, end of a 400 IM, end of a 100 freestyle, your body's gonna be beat down. How do you react, right? Do you hold your technique together? How do you pace it? Like those are important, and these meets are very important for that when your body's all beat down.
You're exactly right. I got some inside information today out of the Minnesota camp from DFL podcast super fan Ian Steffen.
Ooh.
That they're working down there and had some Minnesota classics popping up this week and the training trip. So eight 175s ring a bell.
That one's brutal. That's a bad one.
Yeah,
any other ones that do you have any sets that you remember from back in the day?
8175s is not great. Where you're it's 8175s on 4 minutes where you're trying to be under your 200 goal time, or realistically much faster than that. So if you're trying to go 140 points and under 140 in the 200 back, you're at least under 140. But I remember we were doing it, that we had guys going, I remember you going 135 basically the whole way, 136. That one's tough.
That's tough.
Pace 50s for days. I remember 40 50s where you go three at pace, one easy, all on 40.
Yeah, that's brutal too. That was what I remember that one. I was taking a nap at the bottom of the pool at the end of that one. How about you?
I might have been crying in the shower.
10 200s is a good one. I love that set, but that one was brutal. You go. Four at 215, you got to be 10 seconds under the interval the whole time. We did a backstroke, but you can do other strokes. 10 at 215 or four at 215, three at 210, two at 205, one at 200.
2 minutes. Yep.
And so you just try to be under. That one's brutal.
That one, it makes you rethink some things, but it's worth it in the end. And for us Minnesota guys up north, you get killed in the pool and then you're either on the beach or relaxing in a hotel room, which I would say is pretty lucky to do that. So
a lot of teams don't do that. Like,
it was good times. Also some hurtful memories, but at the end of the day, we're almost to the big time season around the country. Conference. It's basically like a month away, like a month and a week, maybe 5 weeks away. We got some good meets still coming up. I know the Big Ten usually has some tri meets, bigger dual meets with some good matchups coming up here in January. SEC as well. ACC Cal usually starts revving the engine a little bit this time of the year. So those will definitely be here to cover those, and then hopefully previewing some of the conference meets if we get the chance. That's a big task to do, but I think we'll try to do the best that we can and get everyone prepped up for conference season. Yeah, so
on top of that, you have a lot of the transfers that came in halfway through the year, mid-year transfers, and some pan out. I know in some cases, like some kids don't make it. Like Cal in the past talked about Brooks Curry, like thought he was going to be a mid-season. Yep. But sometimes it doesn't pan out. So we're going to see how those pan out over the next 2 months. And hopefully see some exciting big names pop up that, you know, elevate teams. That'd be awesome to see.
It's always funny to watch some of the internationals pop up in the first January 15th at a dual meet. Just
I recognize that name, but not from short course.
That looks like a long course time. And then a month later, they're qualifying for NCs at conference. So, you know, it's... Hey, not everyone is takes people a little bit sometimes to come around in the short course pool. So let's finish this podcast with a little exercise, math exercise for Dez. He was really working him hard over there. We SwimSwam recently put out an article for the fastest combined 400 IM split up by hundreds of strokes. So basically, you're taking someone's 100 fly, their 100 back, their 100 breast, their 100 free individually, and then combining them into a combined 400 IM and seeing who the fastest is. So they did that long course. Thomas Chacon coming out on top, mm-hmm. Michael Andrews second, Michael Phelps third. Mm-hmm. I was like, why don't we do this short course? Why don't we see what it looks like in the short course pool? And so that what we did, we scoured the SwimCloud database looking for times far and wide. Who is the fastest of all time in a combined 4 IM? Is it Desmond Sachin? I don't know. Is it
Tess? Yes, it's not. Not Casey Stowe either. Give you a heads up.
All right.
Who is it?
Let's start with some of the other names that we talked about, and then we'll count down 3, 2, 1, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Andrew Salascar, discussed a lot in the best NCAA team of all time episode. Dez and I outed ourselves as fanboys a little bit. It was a little bit embarrassing. He comes together at a 45-500 fly, 46-800 back, 51-700 breast, and a 43-100 free. The freestyle left him hanging. Everything else, mm-hmm. backstroke too a little bit. It's good. Let's the quick math here. 3 minutes and 7 seconds, approximately.
Yes.
If we did the 200s, if we did 800 IM, I'm actually got my money on Salascar.
Yes.
He's up there. He's top three.
He's up there. Specialist, some would say.
Michael Andrew, 46-500 45-400 fly, 46-500 back, 51-100 breast, 42-500 free.
305.
What are some of the other names we had on here, Dez?
Right, we threw in Ryan Lochte there late. For him, he was 45-400 fly, 45-300 back, 54-300 breast, 41-900 free. And a lot of these people, I think we found that there was always one event holding them back.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, there's even some people, Jordan Crooks was one, Hubert Koch. Yeah. They just didn't have 100 breasts in there. So if you're listening out there somewhere, please tell us if you ever swam 100 breasts in practice. We'll put you on the list. It's like, it's one of those, even someone like Ryan Hoffer, who was elite in three strokes, came in there with the absolute stinker of the 100 breasts. So it's a make or break if you just can't pull that breaststroke together.
Yeah. Ilya Karun was up there, actually, surprisingly. His 100 breast kind of holds him back, but 43-300 fly, 45-300 back, 55-500 breast, and 41-100 free. But when you look at the top three, you know, you have to have four all-around solid strokes, and they're dudes that can swim a fast breaststroke, and I think that's kind of what separates – you know, the men from the boys is that breaststroke leg. You have people who can throw down a 50 point or faster 100 breaststroke and are also able to go 45 or faster fly back in a 41 or faster 100 free, or who kind of make out your top three.
I don't know, Dez, we've having a lot of discussion this fall, and this is what got me excited about this, is I maybe thought I would find some names. We talked about all the people. 51s are automatic right now in the 100 breast this season. So I was like, I don't know, maybe there's a name in here that you never expect. And as a matter of fact, coming in at the three spot is none other than Will Modlin with this 45-700 fly, 43-2 strong performance there in the 100 back, 50.900 breast, and 42-100 free. 42-0 is probably the weak link in there. Coming in at 3 minutes and 1 second, 0.8, 3:01.8 in the combined 4 IM. Not a bad performance there.
Not too bad.
Now who? I think probably the fans probably have two other names in their mind right now of who could possibly be the fastest combined 400 IM all time. Do you care to share who those names might be?
Leon Marchand and Caleb Dressel. And you would be correct. Those are the top two names. Coming in at second is actually Leon Marchand. And I will put an asterisk next to it because his fastest 100 breaststroke is listed as 51.0 when he has gone 48 before on a relay. So it's safe to say he probably would be closer to 50.00 and not 51.0. So I will put an asterisk next to that. But he comes in with a 44.600 back, or 100 fly, 44.700 back, 51.00 breast, and a 40.200 freestyle, coming out to a 300.72. And first place is
none other than Caleb Dressel, who, I should preface this, this is funny too. When I first did this, I was only including the 10ths, and I went through everyone, wasn't even close. Caleb Dressel and Leo Marchand were tied exactly to the 10th. So then I had to go through it and add in the 100th. And then it was only clear that Caleb Dressel was the outright winner, coming in at 42.800 fly, 47.800 back, 50.0 breast, and 39.900 free. Now, you might have your piece about Leon's 100 breast, but I'll take my piece in Caleb Dressel's 100 breast. Mm-hmm. He went 47.8. His best time in swim cloud in the 100 back from none other than the Minnesota and Florida dual meets from 2017. So you can talk about Leon went 48. I got Caleb at minimum 44.5 100 back.
Yeah, he was so good underwater. He had to be right.
Like, yeah.
So good.
It was. It's unfortunate that we didn't quite have, you know, even these our top two guys here. I would say there is leaving something to be desired on, you know, there's that one, the 100 breast for Leon and the 100 back for Caleb that you'd wish to have, you know, was there in practice suited swim that was faster there. Mm-hmm. We know what Leon can do in the 100 breasts on a relay, but now realistically, what do the fans actually want to know? They think it's probably pretty cool that Caleb was 300.56 in the 400 IM combined. But realistically, what matters is who's faster between Dez and I.
Oh, yeah.
And unfortunately, this leads me to my DFL of the week. What do you think about that transition? Unfortunately, folks, I have to concede that Desmond Sachin has topped me by 0.8 of a second. And we won't talk about how far back, how many seconds were behind Caleb and Leon in this combined 400 IM. But yeah, I hate to admit that that is the case, but
the difference came down to, I think, between us, the difference between our breaststrokes and our freestyles. Like, could my breaststroke be fast enough where it outpaces your freestyles faster than my freestyle? And it did.
Unfortunately, I'll oust myself. Although I have gone, I'm like Leon. I can go fast on a relay. I was 5,600 breasts on a relay. But unfortunately, the flat start time is sitting at an embarrassing 101.8. So that one hurt, unfortunately, for old Casey in the combined 4IM.
You know, it happens to the best of us. Having my fastest 100 freestyle be a 48.2, you know, 2 seconds slower than my fastest 100 back is also pretty rough. So sometimes it happens. It is what it is. All I know is I'm faster.
All right, this guy. Well, with that sad news, I think we're going to sign off here and plan for when we on the next one. Back into it with some meet action, seeing where people are at coming off training trip. It should be loaded for a good one, and we'll start cooking away towards conference season. What do you say about that, Des?
Super excited to get back into the swing of things, get all the kids get back into school, and we can get back to our real lives talking about college swimming.
Exactly. We miss it. So we're making our way, making by right now. But we're ready for swimming to get back to work. So as always, thanks for tuning in. If there are some names that we left out today, or some takes on the CSL that we missed, We'd love to hear it. You can always drop a comment on Spotify. I'll make sure this one's up on YouTube. Drop a comment there, and we'll catch you in the next one.